Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
For the first time in my life, I felt in the right place in little bits here and there, or things felt good, or felt like maybe this is what I should be doing, but making films and being on set is 100% where I belong.
On this week's episode, I speak with my friend Robin Hoffman about her journey from working in a psychology-related field to filmmaking. And we talk about how certain things that she's done throughout her life have been little milestones to get her to what she's doing now, where she's winning awards for the work that she's doing, where she feels most heart-centered and purposeful in. And it's super interesting. And you might find near the end of the episode, we dig a little deeper. And it's something that maybe should have been earlier in the episode. But I think it's interesting to have these conversations and to see how we can unravel a couple things to see really what are those pivotal moments that have changed our lives forever. So without further ado, please enjoy this episode with Robin Hoffman. I'm Matt Gilhooly, and this is The Life Shift, candid conversations about the pivotal moments that have changed lives forever. Hello, my friends. Welcome to The Life Shift podcast. And I am here with my friend Robin. Hi, Robin.
Hi, Matt.
Thank you for joining the Life Shift podcast. It took me a little bit to convince you to do this because you are a busy woman.
There was no convincing needed. I wanted to do it from the beginning, but it was just finding the time.
You are so busy. And you know what's cool is now you are officially on season 2 of the Life Shift podcast, where we've upgraded the sound a little bit and kind of adding videos to YouTube. And I think it's special to have you on right here because I'm not sure if you're familiar or people listening are familiar with podcasting, but podcasts, there's a high percentage of people that start podcasts and then don't make it past 10 episodes, don't make it past 25 episodes. And so now we're in the 30s as we're recording yours. And I think it's super special because you don't know this, but you are kind of my inspiration as I continue on. Because what we're going to talk about today and where you are now inspires me to lean really hard into this passion project of mine and make something of it. And I think we're doing that. I mean, my original mission was truly each episode found the ears that needed to hear it.
Yes.
You know, because sometimes we just need to hear how others are facing similar situations or just need that little nudge to do something different. And so I wanted you to know that you are the inspiration for me to keep going with this podcast. So thank you.
You are very sweet. I really appreciate that. And what you're doing is beautiful, giving people a platform to be able to share their story. And like you said, to have others be able to relate to those or be able to say, hey, wait, I went through something similar and I know exactly what they're feeling.
Yeah. And it all stems, you know, like when I was a kid, my mom died when I was really young. And I feel like I didn't have anyone around me that had gone through something similar. And so I felt like I was the only one that had ever had a mother die. And I knew I wasn't, you know, like I knew rationally that I wasn't. But I think just knowing that other people are facing very similar things and we're not going through this unique journey, like completely unique and no one's ever experienced it before, is kind of what is so inspiring. And selfishly, I love these conversations.
That's awesome. That's what makes them good.
Exactly. So Robin and I know each other. We worked together. Not really. We worked at the same company and we crossed paths a few times.
We did.
That was, how many years ago was that?
Oh boy. I was there from 2010 to 2015.
And I started there in 2008 and have been there off and on since. So we crossed our paths multiple times and mostly through email. But it, you know what? You are great, and your journey right now is so exciting. And one last thing before we get started is, early on in the pandemic, I remember you, like, we were all like just so lost and like, what are we doing? And you put out a call on Facebook, like, anyone want to just jump on Zoom and just like get it out?
Yeah, let's just chat.
I was on there in like 10 seconds, like after you did it. I was like, I need contact.
Yes, let's just communicate. We're all going through this collective like trauma, and we had to just talk about how we were handling it and what kind of fun things are you doing? And in that, not just the Zooms, but I had put out an all call. I don't know if you remember this, for some people to show me, send me a video of what you're doing or make up something silly. And I put a compilation together and people loved it because it was just something outside of our own little bubble.
Yeah, it was great. And you know what? It may have inspired, like, I felt like the pandemic was very productive for me. And I think for you, and we'll talk maybe a little bit about that, but like during the pandemic, I got a pandemic master's degree. I released
masters. 13... Is that a master's in pandemics or is that a master's during the pandemic?
Yes. A master's degree during the pandemic, and just finished that recently. And then put coloring books on Amazon, put out a children's book. I guess I was really needing to do things.
Yeah, that was fun.
And the podcast.
I got a drawing of my doggies from you.
Oh, I did that too. I probably drew like 1,000 pet cartoons at the time too, and that was my first podcast experience too, talking about that. So anyway, we're way off topic here, and that's fine, because
we're gonna
that's
do that
how we're gonna do. But anyway, so your story I think is going to resonate with so many people that are kind of doing the day in and day out and have this like aching for their passion. So before we get into kind of what that kind of pivotal moment is, can you paint a picture of what Robin was like before?
Sure. I mean, I'm not an artist like you, but I'll paint the best picture verbally that I can.
A verbal picture.
Picture this. When I was really young, I was about 10 years old. Unfortunately, I had a stepfather that wasn't very kind. And there were sometimes he would set up these situations just to kind of ridicule, I guess. And we were sitting at dinner and he was going around the table. I had a lot of siblings and he was like, what do you want to do when you grow up? And at 10 years old, I said, I want to make films. I want to make TV shows. I want to do that. And I was laughed at and told that that wasn't going to happen. It would never happen. And that's not a job. And so I did what I was supposed to do. I got out of high school and I went to college and I got my degree in psychology, which I do not regret for one moment. And so I spent 27 years working with people with disabilities. I was a certified behavior analyst. I specialized in autism. And it was an amazing, incredible career. Very, very stressful. It took a lot out of me, mind, body, and soul, but it also helped me a lot. I have a daughter with autism, so having the education that I had and the experience that I had really helped me as a parent. I really feel like I would have been lost as a parent had I not had that experience. So I was fortunate in that respect.
Well, and two, the fact that you had the experience as a parent also helped you help others. So it was like a nice full circle.
It was, that to me was incredible, because I would do lectures for parents and I would go into homes and I would teach parents. And it was one thing to come in as a specialist and say, this is how we should do it. But when my next sentence was, I have a child with autism, it was like there was this openness and this really willingness to listen at that point.
I mean, I'm sure it was super impactful. What made you go into psychology? Was that just...
It's always, I mean, I relate to people. I walk this world with my heart on my sleeve. It's, you know, a lot of people, we joke in my field now, they walk around using their brain. I walk this earth with my heart. And I just wanted to help people, and probably my inner child as well. I say that often, you know, I probably wanted to make that better for myself and just make sure nobody else experienced those kinds of things. And then I was in a behavior therapy course, and this was, I'm going to date myself here. It was like 1992. And I watched a video, our professor had showed us a video of a child with autism, and autism was not a household name at this point. People didn't really know what it was. And I was fascinated. I was staring at the screen. I couldn't get enough. I walked up to the professor afterwards. I was 18 years old. And I said, where can I work with kids like this? How can I learn to work with kids like this? And he said, well, I know there's a facility a couple of miles away. And he told me the name of it. I got in my car, Matt. I drove to this facility. I cannot make this up. I parked, I walked in. I said, I want to see a manager. They brought out a manager. And I said, I want you to teach me how to work with these children. And she said, okay. And I started right then and there.
That, to me, like 18.
I was 18.
My 18-year-old version of me was like, what? Like, give me money. I just need money to go do things. Like, I didn't care. Like, I had no, let's be real. I'm in my 40s and I still don't have a direction. So, hey.
You absolutely do have a direction. This is your direction and you're living it.
But 18, I mean, to be inspired by something and want to go full force. Was there always still that, like, I know you were shut down at like 10 with the film kind of thing from your stepfather, but was that always there? Were you doing stuff on the side or?
Creatively, I was always writing. I never stopped writing. I was always that person at work in my personal life, social life, where people would say, hey, Robin, I need to write a letter to so-and-so, whether it was a personal letter or a professional, like, can you write that for me? Hey, Robin, can you help me write my resume? Hey, Robin, you know, I was always the writer that people went to. I wrote children's books for each of my kids as they were growing up for situations that they were going through. And three of them have actually been published.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So I've always kept myself in the creative world. And then of course, working where you and I worked, it sparked some of that creative energy even more.
So as you're progressing through this career, I know you launched a production of some sort related, right? You were kind of marrying the two fields.
I was. So jump back again, 13, 14 years ago, I was diagnosed with celiac disease, which back then nobody had heard of. Nobody knew what gluten was. There was nothing gluten-free on the shelves, and when you could find it, it was ridiculously expensive, and it was disgusting. Like, it really, there was one time I was so excited because I found these biscuits. It was like gluten-free biscuits. It was like 13 years ago. So we made them, and we were all like, what is that smell? So now it became a dare because my kids were young. Like, you know, you try it. This is disgusting. You try it. It literally tasted like Play-Doh. Now, let's be real. I've never actually eaten Play-Doh, not that I can remember, but it's exactly what I would imagine Play-Doh would taste like. It was so bad. And I'm like, now I've just wasted all this money. So I spent all these years like just creating all these delicious recipes that didn't cost a bazillion dollars and that were satisfying and very, very tasty. So at one point I kept saying to myself, how can I share these with people? I don't want to, you know what I mean? I don't know how to, I want people to not have to go through what I went through. People are getting diagnosed every single day and the struggle to become gluten-free is daunting, and eating Play-Doh biscuits. I don't want people to eat Play-Doh biscuits. So I did actually put together a baking show, but I couldn't leave disabilities behind because it was such a part of me for so long. So I incorporated the two, and the baking show, I was the host. I would invite a guest with a disability, and we would talk about their challenges and their successes while we taught them how to bake a gluten-free recipe.
That's amazing.
It was great. It really was.
You know, and gluten-free products have gone from Play-Doh to compressed sawdust. I mean, we're getting closer.
Hey, listen, there's cardboard out there too. No, they really have come a long way. There is some great stuff, but it's always very, it's just riddled with stuff you don't really need, heavy carbs or things that just you shouldn't eat a lot of anyway.
I only say that from current experience, as I now have a gluten sensitivity. I don't have celiacs, okay. Fortunately for me, but so I've ventured into the world of gluten-free products, and there are some good things that on the shelf. I'm not a cook. I don't like to cook. So, you know, I got to go for the prepackaged garbage. But those gluten-free Oreos are pretty dang tasty.
I haven't eaten them. There's, because there's probably nothing good in it. And unfortunately, it's not just gluten for me. I have lots of stuff I can't eat. I used to joke that when I would go on break from work, I would say, well, if you can't find me, it's lunchtime. I'm probably gnawing on the bark of a tree out there because that's about all I can eat.
I remember you doing that show. Where were you showing it? Like, was it on YouTube or how were you?
It was on YouTube and Facebook. Okay. It was just like social media, but it was really taking off. Well, taking off for my liking. I had anywhere from 3,000 to 10,000, you know, views per episode and just incredible comments. My very first episode, I had my daughter on. She has a syndrome called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. And, we were talking about that, and probably a couple of days after I aired it, I got a message from a mom, and you're going to see me get emotional, Matt. And she said to me, my daughter and I sat on the couch and we watched your show together, and she looked at me and said, Mom, she's just like me, because she had never met anyone else with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. And I was like, this is it. This is exactly why I'm doing what I'm doing. And we did it until COVID hit, and then we weren't able to film anymore.
That comment resonates with me, and that's really, I mean, that's the life shift for me, is hearing these behind the scenes. I get messages all the time saying, like, I really needed to hear that episode. It may not be the same story, but something that someone said in that triggered something in me. And it's like, I get it. You're like,
yeah.
This is the reason that we're putting these things together. And like the way that you did it and marrying, you know, the things that you were most passionate about, but also providing great information, not only about whatever someone is facing in their own lives, but also like a recipe that's probably better than Play-Doh.
It was totally legit better than Play-Doh. And also it was great for the audience to learn these multiple things, because I wanted, you know, I brought in a guest who had autism. Mm-hmm. So it was great for somebody to see specific mannerisms, maybe the way they spoke, so that maybe if they're standing next to them at work or in a grocery line or whatever, they might notice, oh, instead of thinking something negative about it, they might think, oh, wait, I saw, okay, this might be somebody who has, insert whatever disability we were talking about that day.
And an awareness. I mean, just this, a general awareness. I mean, I know you said autism is more of a household name at this point. You know, people are very aware, but they're still not aware.
Right.
You know, of the details and what.
That's what I always say, that I'm like, there's awareness out there. People are aware, but what they don't have is understanding. Mm. So now we have to switch. We've got all the awareness. Now we have to have understanding.
Yeah. And I feel like we're slowly, like there's some reality shows that are doing a good job. Not, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? We're not sensationalizing certain disabilities, right, but also bringing awareness. I don't know if you've seen some of these on like A&E.
Yes.
But you know, there's certain things that they're trying to give a little bit more of awareness, that disability is just, you know, a diagnosis of some sort, mm-hmm. and people are living their best lives with what they have.
Right. It's not who we are. It's what we have. Yep.
You just mentioned that kind of went away at COVID. Where are we in your getting closer to shifting?
So that was the beginning of the shift. So I didn't have like a one moment shift. This was a very gradual, one thing led to another. And it was so meant to be, that even during each step, when I was devastated, when COVID hit and the school shut down and I couldn't film, you know, Bake With Me anymore, I was really, really sad about that. And I tried to do some stuff from home and some online versions, and it just wasn't the same. Because like I said earlier, I walk the world with my heart and I feel people's energy, and I was able to really explore things and get more out of them, that online, it just didn't work for me, nor did I feel like it was good for my audience. Yeah. So I stopped doing the show. Like I said, I was devastated, but I couldn't sit idle. So I started writing again, and I had helped a couple of friends out with some of their films here and there. And I just wrote something one day about being a part of the pandemic, or being a couple during the pandemic. And it was a comedy, And I reached out to a handful of people and we decided to just quarantine for a week prior. And we came to my house for a full weekend and just shot the movie. It was my first movie. I had never done it before myself. And it was so much fun. And I was, every ounce of it just made me feel incredible. So I wanted to keep doing it.
You felt like you were in the right place.
I was in for the first time in my life. I felt in the right place in little bits here and there, or things felt good, or felt like maybe this is what I should be doing. But making films and being on set is 100% where I belong.
Yeah. And I remember watching that. What was it called?
Unmasked.
Unmasked. Yeah. That was, when did you do that in the pandemic? That was pretty early on.
It was August of 2020.
Yeah. So you were in the thick of things.
In the thick of things. Yeah.
So you did all the pieces. You were in it. I remember that. You wrote it.
Huge mistake. But yes, I was.
No way.
Now that I know what I know, but doing what we were doing was fine. I mean, there were six of us making a movie and three of us were acting in it. So yeah.
So you played, what roles did you play? Not roles, but like what did you do on that?
So I was the wife. There was a husband and wife and who were quarantined, and things were just revealed about their relationship because they were stuck together for so long. And then her mind starts going a little cuckoo and she thinks that he's interested in the neighbor, which he's totally not interested in the neighbor. It's just,
but you were the writer, director, producer?
I did not direct. No? I actually had a friend come in and direct, but I did produce it and I wrote it. And I acted in it.
And that was, well, that was the best part, right? The acting. You loved it. You want to do it every day. You want to be the
acting
lead.
Was fun for me, but no, I liked the movie making was really what made me want to be there.
So what came from that?
Oh, what didn't come from that, Matt? An entire life shift. Is this where you play music? And
there's going to be fanfare. You can't hear it, but it's out there.
I'll do it again. Life shift. Yeah. So once I realized this is absolutely where I belong, I am an all in kind of person. So I started doing some research. I started reaching out to people, joining film groups, watching endless YouTube videos on filmmaking and cameras and lighting and acting and directing. And I started just as soon as we were able to be on set again and people started filming again, I would reach out to anyone I knew locally and just said, can I be on your set? I didn't care what they had me doing. I'd make coffee. I changed garbage. I swept floors. I did anything that they needed me to do just to be a part of the experience and start networking and getting involved. And I made a lot of great contacts through that so that by the time I was ready to make my second film, which I had a little bit more experience at that point, I knew people and I was able to talk to them and say, hey, this is what I want to do. Would you like to be a part of it? And at that point, because I didn't have a budget, or at least much of a budget for it, we did a lot of bartering. I'll work for you, or I'll write for you, or I'll do this for you if you can come in and help me with my film. So yeah, so it's been since then. I dove right in. And it just grew bigger and bigger. Now the positions I hold are much higher than the type of work I was doing at the beginning, which still I believe everyone should do. I think everyone should get in on the ground floor and learn things that way. Now I'm making award-winning films.
You sure are. I mean, there's a lot of them now. Like, I feel like, I'm like, when does she sleep? when do you do all this? How many films have you created since that Unmasked now?
Films that are actually mine, I've worked on so many films, probably 40 plus films in the past 2 years, which
that's
is a lot.
Nuts.
I know. Because that's what, it's so funny when people ask me, they're like, wow, how long have you been doing this? They just think it's a lifelong career for me. And I'm like, 2.5 years. They're like, what? I'm like, I know. But it's exactly where I'm meant to be. So I believe I've written eight films, I think. Eight. And they're all, most of them, there's one that was just made just to be silly, but they're deep messages. I want to make an impact on this world that will never change. So whether I'm, working in the field of psychology, working with people with disabilities, or making a film, there's always going to be some type of thing to learn something, but I want it to be entertaining. And I also want, just like your podcast, people to be able to relate to it and get something out of it.
Yeah, I remember watching, was it Dance With Me? Dance?
Dance For Me.
For Me. That was so good.
Which sounds very provocative, but it is not.
Well, we'll see. No, but you mentioned award winning. So you have a few of these now that have received like big awards.
Yeah, it's been pretty amazing. Yeah, one of my films called Speak is about a young lady with a speech impediment.
Oh, I love that one.
Very good. It's such a great film. And
I cried.
You cried?
At the end.
I always say that to people. You're welcome. And I'm sorry.
I love it. I am a male that likes to cry. Give me something nice that will make me cry. And I am not ashamed to do it.
Aww.
I did cry. And I definitely sent the Speak one to other people.
Aw, thank you so much.
To watch. But anyway, tell me like what you won.
Yeah. So what's funny is my composer actually worked with us at the same company that we worked at, Frank Long.
He's a gem.
Frank Long is great. Francisco. And he has composed every single one of my films. And usually like when we have what's called picture lock, when we have it where we want it and I send it to him, I'm like, all right, man, let's make him cry again. And that's sort of our running joke. Like, is this going to make them cry? Is this going to work? Composing is so incredible. And he's very good at it. But Speak, like I said, is about a young lady with a speech impediment. And it has won quite a few awards. I don't know how many at this point, but it's very impactful. It was shot well. A gentleman by the name of Daniel Hagler shot Speak and edited by John von Mutius, who is also an incredibly talented editor. And you just put all those wonderful pieces together and you get, you know, this great product with a great message. And I put it on Facebook not that long ago, probably a month ago, and it has over 15,000 views, and that's just organically. So from people sharing and people enjoying it. So that's been great.
It's so good. When you got that first award, what went through your head? Who, me?
I'm still like that, Matt. The other night, this past weekend, I was at a film festival and I won Best Director for Dance For Me. And I like looked at my husband, like, is that right? Like, did I hear that? He's like, go up there. And I was like, but I don't understand. Cause in my head, Dance For Me itself, I thought might win an award, because my cast and crew were so incredible and the film is beautiful, but I still don't get it. Like for me, he's like, God, I'm like, okay, I'm going. But it still blows me away. But that was my fifth Best Director award.
Perhaps they're on to something.
That's crazy.
Well, and you just said it too, which was interesting. When you were talking about Speak, you didn't talk about anything that you did on it. You gave credit to
I do that.
Else.
But the big people worked hard. And
so did you.
Yeah, I did. I wrote it, directed it, and produced it.
Do you think that you are a better script writer because of your psychology background and working with humans for so long?
100%. I think everything I've been through in my life has made me a better everything. I think working in the field for so long has made me a better director, because I know how to meet people where they're at, and I know how to draw out the best of them. And that's what a director needs to do.
I was thinking that early on when you were talking about going, you know, for psychology and whatnot, to just understand the human experience and all the different areas of it. Is there an area that you're afraid to create a movie about?
A topic?
Like a topic,
mean?
Yeah.
No. I have no fear, Matt. No.
You have no fear.
I mean, that's not exactly true. I always want to put exactly how I live my life, put good into the world. So I will not do films that I feel are harmful.
Okay.
I won't perpetuate stereotypes. I won't, you know, put people down. I won't use verbiage that I would never use in real life. I have had people ask me and I just can't. It's just not within my realm, and nor would they want me to, because it wouldn't be authentic. I think everything I do is very authentic, and that's why they're successful.
And part of me asked that question, you know, selfishly, having all these conversations on the Life Shift podcast. We have people that are finally talking about like that dark moment or something, and sometimes we for so long run away from it. So I asked that in a sense of maybe was there any like things that you were not ready to share so vulnerable words. Yeah. Be so vulnerable about, you know, like, I mean, you're talking, are any of these like super personal, or do you write from the perspective of someone else?
It's funny that you ask me that. I have written a novel, by the way, in my spare time. Just, you know.
Do you do that in your sleep?
I do.
Just sleep writing.
My ideas do come to me, by the way, in the middle of the night. I'll wake up at like 4:30 in the morning and I don't want to wake my husband up. So I hide under the covers with my phone and just put like notes in. Hilarious.
It's really hot.
Yeah, it does. I don't like it. But my novel is loosely based on my life.
Okay.
So there's definite, you know, fantasy and things that I made up within it, but there's very key elements of my life in there. That's why it's sitting in a laptop that nobody's ever seen or touched. Everything else I do, I get my inspiration from other people. And there's probably little bits of elements of myself in there, you know. But I met a young lady with a speech impediment, and she's a very talented actress. I talked to her mother, and I said, this thing just popped in my head after I met her. Is this something she might be interested in? And she said, yes. So we talked about it, and I wrote the film, and she actually starred in it.
Yeah, it was so good. So if you're listening, go find Speak. Where can they find that?
Every social media outlet I have is Hoffy's Heart or Hoffy's Heart Productions.
So we'll put those in the show notes so people can watch that. Will you tell us, or are you allowed to tell us, of your special project that you're working on now or just finished working on?
Absolutely. So one of the most amazing things that has happened to me in my career so far is I was contacted by Make-A-Wish. And they let me know that there was a young lady whose wish it was to be an actress in a film. And they asked if I could help her. And I was like, oh, watch me. So I wrote a short film for her. And I just put it out there online. I've built such a great film family, is what I call it, just my film family. And those branches just extend out to so many places that I was like, I can't choose between these talented people to say, oh, I want you to do this, I want you to do this. So I just put it out there on social media. I said, this is what's happening. If you want to volunteer your time and your expertise, email me. And Matt, within a day, I had over 100-150 emails of people that wanted to be involved. And I was just like, now I have to sort through all this. And now I still have to choose. But at the end of the day, or at the end of the project, we had 71 volunteers.
Wow.
Between cast and crew. We had food donated. We had cupcakes donated for all the teens. I mean, it was unbelievable to watch this community come together for one special young lady. So I wrote the film, and she got to get some acting lessons with some very special people from Book From Tape. And we had table reads online, and then the days came, and we got to shoot this beautiful little film for her. And she was a star. I was so worried because she had never really acted before. And she walked in and she was ready with her lines, and she full force just gave me what I needed. And
that's amazing.
The whole process was just beautiful.
So fulfilling. When will that be shared publicly, or is that more of a
absolutely
private thing?
So, you know, Matt, I couldn't just do one simple thing.
Oh, well, of course.
So I decided to put a second crew together, and we actually have been filming a documentary about granting her wish.
That's awesome.
So we're working on that as well. And we, Make-A-Wish is putting together a red carpet premiere for her, so she can walk in and be the star that she is and watch her film. And we'll show some of the documentary. It's not quite ready yet. Plus we'll be filming that day at the premiere to add to the documentary. So we'll see pieces and parts of the documentary that day. And we'll be able to see the film. And then part of what I wrote involved a lot of social media influencers. So we had some just incredible folks send in videos and be a part of the film. So we're going to do a social media push for the actual film itself, which is only 8 minutes. So we'll push that probably online. The red carpet premiere is September 17th. So I'll probably put it out online on September 18th. And then it's going to be embedded in the documentary. So the documentary will be something that will probably push through film festivals.
That's amazing. Like, okay, so here's my question that came up in mind. So first of all, that's amazing. Make-A-Wish, you're changing this girl's, you know, you're making her dreams come true, right? And she's getting all these cool things. And then you mentioned, just in passing, it's an 8-minute film. But an 8-minute film takes you how long? Give an idea to these people that have no clue the work that goes into this 8-minute film.
The way we associate it, which will vary greatly depending on if you have special effects, visual effects, any of those added things will add time. But generally, when you watch something, it's about an hour of production time for every minute of film.
Wow.
But it was even for us, for some of the things that we did, it was even longer. We actually filmed over a 3-day period for an 8-minute film.
Right.
And the pre-production alone, I probably spent 40, 50 hours on.
Sometimes I think we discount, like when we're watching something on television or we're even watching a commercial or something, the work right. that goes into it, or even something as simple as a podcast. Like the other right. day, and you can probably relate to this, the other day I was like, okay, so what is an episode? Like, what does that involve for me? And I wanted to make it myself a checklist because all along I've just kind of been doing it. And it's so far I'm at 33 tasks per episode.
Wow.
And you're like, but it's just audio, but there's so much that's involved in it too. So I can kind of relate. It's not quite as intense as getting all the other people together. But I wanted to just get that out there that, you know, these short films take a long time.
Yeah.
And a lot of work.
It was amazing. Like her parents were like, we thought they were going to like bring her in and let her be a background actor on like a film somewhere or something. They had no idea. We had no idea. I didn't realize how big it would become until we started doing it, but I wanted to give her everything she deserved.
Are you, Robin, ready for what happens next after that gets out there and you're now connected even more so with Make-A-Wish?
I'll be honest with you, Matt. If I am able to continue to do what I'm doing and just give people opportunities and tell my stories and make an impact, I'm happy. My heart is already full.
At what point in your life were you able to go full into this? Like, were you still doing, at what point were you still doing a little bit of both worlds?
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Well, I was still working while I was doing the baking show. And then as that was building success and I was doing a little bit more, like I said, volunteering on other people's sets and stuff, I did leave my job at that time. My husband's very supportive and he knew that there's no way I could function enough to do both. Because, you know, I've neglected to mention it, but while I was doing the baking show, I also did a talk show. So I'd had Bake With Me and I had Chat With Me, which was a podcast very similar to what you're doing. And my tagline was ordinary people with extraordinary stories. That was great too. So those, the two of those shows kept me so busy, and they were both sort of taking off at the time when COVID hit. So I had left my job at that point.
And then you were like, you know what? It's time. As soon as that Unmasked came out, you're like, I love every second
this
of
is
doing
it.
This.
I yeah. had, this is what I have to do. And now, yeah, now that's my full-time job.
Have you done yourself any feature length of your own?
I'm in the middle of writing a feature. Actually, I have, there's some interest, some people who are interested in funding Dance for Me to become a feature.
That's amazing.
So we're still in the talks and I'm still in the writing phase, but it's hard. I'm so busy making movies. It's hard for me to write movies anymore.
We should talk about your social media post yesterday. By now I'll be dated, but maybe you could share.
Yeah. So there's several things that I'm doing, but I was brought in by Khalila Ali, who was Muhammad Ali's wife quite some time ago, to write and direct her pilot episode of a show called Pure Justice. And I know, it's, cool. I'm still like, I don't know.
What is your world? It's so cool.
I say that all the time. What is my world? When I'm like, I gotta go to the premiere tonight. I'm going to a premiere. So I'll go to the premiere. And then I'm home the next morning and I'm like scrubbing the toilet and washing dishes. I'm like, this is not like something, we need something to, I'm just kidding. But
yeah, so you're working. So yesterday, which is now dated, but yesterday she posted that she was working on the pilot. She was writing and she's going to be like really into it. After winning Best Director for your other film, you came home, you had to start writing that pilot. But she's so into her work that she needed to put out a call on social media to remind her to use the restroom. So I sent her a message that maybe she should look into that astronaut stalker situation. And then she doesn't ever have to get up. She can continue writing the whole time. But I don't know if that was a good idea.
It was a great idea. I'm not opposed to the diaper idea. I just think it's probably not a great idea for me. I need to get up every once in a while and walk around. But I get so into my stories and I just want to write. And all of a sudden it'll be like, oh, I'll get some pang of some sort. Either I'm super hungry or super thirsty, or man, you probably should have gone to the bathroom 20 minutes ago. So yeah.
Okay. So that's a good question. And this will help me too. Like, how do you have any advice to people that are leaning really hard into their passion projects? Like, what can you tell them that you've learned along the way?
I think really surrounding yourself and people that believe in you, number one, obviously, because that started at a very young age for me where I didn't feel like I had that support. And now being around it, it's like, whoa, I will never, like, it's funny, Matt, to be in this field and to change fields at my age. I mean, I'm just going to say it. I'm going to be 50 very soon. Very soon. Too soon. Thank you. So changing careers at 48 years old is insanity. Insanity. And also walking into a male-dominated field, that's number two. And number three is I'm just at a point in my life. Am I allowed to curse on this?
Sure.
Okay. I'm at the point in my life that I just don't put up with people's shit if I don't have to. I will do anything for anyone and I will not be treated with disrespect. I just won't. And you get that on these sets sometimes, or you'll get people with egos that can barely fit through the front door. And I'm just like, I don't need to deal with that. So I don't. So it's an interesting dynamic, because had I done this when I was younger, I don't know that I would have been successful, to be honest with you. But knowing, having the experience I have and knowing people the way I do, it's given me this great, just, I don't even know, just knowledge and ability to be able to deal with people or not deal with people if I don't want to. And I'm loving it.
Yeah, you've really curated something beautiful for yourself. But I think, like I said earlier, you're inspiring other creators to like lean really hard into it and believe in yourself.
So that's why surrounding yourself with people who believe in you is so important. And also just getting involved. So if you're still working and you want to do your craft, just insert yourself into it, whether it be little groups of people who also do it, so you get that support, people are like-minded. Put aside an hour, 2 hours a week, if you can spare it, to just sort of engage into watching videos about what you want to do, or actually do creating what you want to create, and just make sure you're giving that a little bit more time each week so that you can become immersed in it eventually, and hopefully it can become your life shift.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I've started doing, because I started this podcast as a school project in a class, and we didn't have to launch it, and of course I did. And I put it out there. I was like, why am I going to do this without doing it, right? So I did it. And then it felt like I was just kind of learning as I went. And so I started a podcasters group on LinkedIn of people in similar situations, because there's a ton of people out there podcasting, like business-to-business podcasts. And there's all sorts of advice for that. But there's not a lot of people talking about people that are doing it all themselves and kind of working together. So I love that advice of just like surrounding yourself with people that are just as passionate and authentic about what they're doing.
Yeah.
And I think where your success also lies is in the fact that everything you do is true to you, right? You're not choosing things just because, you know, maybe early or younger people trying to go into the industry will just choose things because it's going to make them famous or it's going to, you know, whatever. Yep. But you're choosing things that are heart-centered, you know. I mean, Hoffie's heart.
Hoffie's heart.
I mean, that speaks to me a lot, because I don't want to, like these conversations I told you earlier, I got rid of the interview questions because I just want to chat. I want to have this real conversation. Yeah. And if I came in with these five questions of like, here's my next question, I wouldn't be paying attention to what you're talking about. And so I really feel that authentic voice that you're sharing of like kind of the approach that you're going into, and super inspired by you.
Oh, I remember when you first reached out and you were thinking about doing the podcast. I was like, do it. Do it.
I'll tell you, it's the most fulfilling thing I've ever done in my entire life. And I'm sure you can relate to that as you work on your films. It's just like, good. It just, everything feels right. Yeah. Yesterday, I had a recording with someone and technology just didn't work. And it hurt me. Like I took it on. And have you ever had a situation like where just things were going wrong on set? And do you internalize that like me?
It's filmmaking.
Okay, so everything goes wrong all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, things always, and you have to sort of just be ready for that, and you have to be able to go with the flow. But that's why preparation is so important, just like you've added an extra step into your podcasting where somebody can go in and check to make sure their equipment is working. That's what you do. That's why you spend so much time in what we call pre-production, to make sure that production goes as smoothly as it can.
Always something, right? Always something.
Always something. Well, especially with COVID.
Oh, in your field, yeah.
Because, you know, even filming after somebody, your main camera guy could wake up in the morning and be sick. And then now what do you do, right?
Has that taught you, do you now have, well, I guess you started this mostly during the pandemic. Do you have contingencies that you always build in? Or is that just kind of you fly by the seat of your pants?
We do. Sometimes we have to fly by the seat of our pants, but we do because there are so many people involved. So to have 40 people available on a certain given day, you can't just go, oh, we'll film it tomorrow. You can't. There's not tomorrow. You have to find a way to make it happen today.
I hope that your novel sees the light of day at some point. I'm interested in hearing more about that. So now that it's out there in the public, you're kind of forced to do it. I'm sorry. It's like, it's a done deal. And then it'll be a feature film. So
it actually, you know, I said it hasn't seen the light of day, and that was kind of a white lie, because I kind of forgot. I did, Matt. I'm so sorry. This is not the lie shift. This is the life shift. Letter, yeah. I got it now. So I met this wonderful woman. Her name is Renelle Golden. She's a filmmaker, beautiful human, and she writes for other people. And we had been talking about some stuff, and I think I said something about the novel or whatever, and she turns books into scripts. And so there was some random day that I just reached out to her and I was like, were you serious about that? Do you want to do that? And so we worked out the financial piece and I just sent it to her. I've never reread it. I never read it after I wrote it. Like I told her, I said, this could be like, I literally have no idea, but I know that the story in there is good if we could, whatever. And she is turning it into a screenplay, but I don't know that it would ever, I don't know if I'll ever be able to film it. It's very emotional.
Well, if you need someone to look at it or read it, let me know. I'm always interested in that. I mean, after my mom died, it took me forever to grieve properly because I didn't have the tools. I didn't have the people around me telling me like how to do it or what to do. And once I did it, once I figured it out for myself, I became a more sharing person and sharing the gross moments and the parts that like the, not the performative parts, but here's like, just here, this sucks, right? Like these moments, this is how I'm feeling. It's okay to feel this way. And so even if there are those pieces like that, that intrigues me more than if it was like some surface thing that didn't dive deep. So I hope that at some point others get to read that, and I'm just putting it out there, and you should have the confidence that I'm sure it's damn good. So there's that.
Thank you. And I believe that it is good. I just have to be able to, I have to be ready.
Yeah.
But I mean, I sent it to her, so that's a big deal. That's already like,
you lied to me about it. It's perfect.
I did. I'm just so used to saying that it's just sitting there because it had sat there for probably 8-9 years without.
Maybe you'll read it in 2023 and you'll be re-inspired.
Maybe I will, because I am definitely looking to do features now instead of shorts. So,
and life changes too. Like I look at stuff that I wrote 10 years ago and I'm like, wow, that is not me anymore. You know, like I've, and I think a lot of it has to do with just putting it on paper, right? It's just, now it's there, it's out, right? And I don't have to internalize that. So I'm getting way off topic again, because that's just
me. we're gonna do that
but what I like to do, I mean, I think your story is so inspiring of just like, just lean in and do the things that bring you joy if you can and you have the ability to do it. Do that.
It took me a long time to learn that, and it took a lot. You mentioned grief, and I didn't get into this earlier because it's a lot and it's very heavy, but in order for me to learn that this is what I wanted to do, or know that this is what I should do, is I went through hell. My family, from 2015 to 2018, we lost 8 family members, people I was very, very close to. One of my closest, dearest friends, she was my sister-in-law, and I used to call her my sister-in-life. And then my mother passed away, and my father-in-law, who was living with us, I was taking care of him. I mean, it was just my brother-in-law.
Wow.
And my brother-in-law is where Hoffy's heart came from. His nickname was Hoffy. My last name is Hoffman. So his last name was Hoffman as well. He passed away from pancreatic cancer. Yeah, it was such a difficult situation because, one, he was so young. Mm-hmm. You know, he was in his 40s, and we had already gone through multiple deaths, like one after another. We couldn't even grieve for one before the next one was happening. And I was on a plane. I had just returned from visiting my niece, who had just lost her mother, my sister-in-law. I'm on the plane, on the tarmac, like we had just landed, and I get a text from my brother-in-law that says, "Can you meet me at the hospital?" And I literally looked at my husband. I said, I can't do that. Yeah. Like, I don't have it in me. I can't do this. But then, of course, my response was, sure, I'll be right there because I can do it. I didn't want to do it, but I can. So I got to the hospital, and he had a chair next to his bed, and he said, "Come sit down." And I said, "I don't want to." I was like a child that literally knew that she would explode if like one more thing happened. And I looked at my husband, and he, you know, gave me like this nod, like, just go do it. And so I sat down next to my brother-in-law, and he looked at me and he said, "I watched you take care of my mother, and I watched you take care of my father." He said, "Will you be my person?" And I was like, yes. You know, it was like one of those. So I was like, "What is happening?" And he said, "I have pancreatic cancer. And if you know anything about that, it's a very unfortunate diagnosis. And most people, I'm not saying it's impossible, people do survive, but most people do not." And his was from the date of diagnosis, 3 months later he passed.
Yeah, it's relentless.
But I was doing the baking show at the time, and he was such an advocate for what I was doing. And he would, "Robin, you're going to do this. This is going to be great. You know, millions of people are going to want to watch it." You know, he was just so cute about it. And like I said, his nickname was Hoffy. So that's when I created Hoffy's Heart.
That, you know, and things are born from, I would say that some of people's biggest like successes come from those darker moments, because I think they make us stop and think. I would say that this version of Matt is very similar to kind of like in that story of my when I watched my grandmother pass away of cancer as well. And she, at the end, she said, "I wish I hadn't worried so much, because all that matters is love in the end." And I was like, well, as soon as she died, I was like, you know what? I'm going to quit this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to stop serving other people and serve myself and not stop worrying, but try not to worry about the things that really don't matter. Right.
That's it. And to enjoy what you're doing and going through all this grief of one person after another, and then sitting in a room where I was literally doing some counseling with students, and then they would, you know, be sitting across from me, and my heart was broken and their heart was broken. So I felt like what normally, because I tell people all the time, it's hard to understand unless you do go through it, but I don't just hear you. I don't just see you. I feel you. I feel everything. So when you're sitting across from me and you're feeling, and I can't store it, there's nowhere to store it anymore. It was like, my heart was just broken. I was like, I can't keep doing this. And then when I was on the sideline doing the baking show or writing or being on somebody's set, and I felt, you know, my heart was healing or it was fulfilled, and I was able to feel good. It was like, okay, I need to make that shift, and I deserve to be happy, and I can still give to people, and I can still be there and support people and, you know, make a difference, but it might look a little different on a daily basis, something more that I can handle.
I mean, and here we are near the end of the podcast, and I think that's probably your trigger, you know, and that, yeah, that section of really, really hard times that kind of opened your heart to these new experiences to then fill it in different ways and to honor these people.
100%.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, so you can just take that chunk and like put it earlier in the podcast.
No way. This is our conversation and this is how it goes. And you know, what's funny is I started this podcast on the week of my mom's birthday, and that was intentional. And then I took some time off after I had a bunch of episodes recorded before I started recording season two. The first person for season two booked on the day that my mom died. And aww, so that was just coincidence. And then... Well, I don't know. Maybe my mom did that. I didn't plan that. Because I give you guys open... You can choose when you want. And so... Right. And then the other day I'm looking down and I'm like, okay, so season one is done. It's 32 episodes. That's how old my mom was when she died.
Aww.
And I was like, I think she's playing. So,
thanks, mom.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, there are certain things like that, that we need to go through these moments and they suck. And I'm grateful for what I've learned after going through those moments.
Right.
And I'm sure you're a better writer and producer because of those really hard moments, because you now just want to be around the right people and the good people and fill your heart in certain ways.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I there's no way, had I not gone through all of those things that I went through, that I would be doing what I'm doing today.
I get it. And it's hard to like be grateful for those moments, but I'm grateful for what I've learned.
That's it. Not grateful for the moments, but grateful for who I've become since.
And, you know, and in a way they've helped shape that, you know, by what they had to go through.
100%.
I like to end these podcast episodes with a question, and it varies depending on who I'm talking to. So what if today Robin went back to Robin who had just left that hospital room talking to your brother-in-law? What would you tell that version of Robin about this new journey that you're on?
Ooh, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay.
Because you probably felt at that moment that everything...
Nothing could be okay ever again.
Everything was falling apart. You know, and I asked this question. I mean, I know it's not possible to do, but sometimes we have to go through the journey to get to where we are. Most of us aren't going to just snap our fingers and be to this other place.
And if we did, we wouldn't appreciate it. And we wouldn't, you know, feel as deeply as we do toward what we're doing.
Exactly. And that was your point earlier when you were talking about, like, had you gone into this as a teenager or as a young adult into the film industry, you probably wouldn't appreciate the way you do now. And you probably, you know, like, I feel like you had to go through everything that you went through, good and bad, to get to this amazing award-winning best director a million times over film extraordinaire. I mean, like, you're doing the dang thing.
I'm doing it.
And you're making a career out of it, and people's lives are changed by what you're doing. Not just the people watching the films, but the people being a part of it, the people, you know.
Yes.
You're changing lives. So proud to know you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for being a part of the Life Shift podcast too, because I know, you know, you're a busy lady, and you carved away a couple hours for me. So I appreciate it.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
I appreciate you, Matt.
All right, my friends, this has been Robin's story, where if you listen to the end, then you get a little bit of that deeper life shift. But I hope you're walking away inspired to do the things that bring your heart joy, and lean into those things if you are able to do it. And we will be back next week with a brand new episode. So if you get an opportunity and you're enjoying these conversations, please rate the show 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, if you could leave a review, that helps get other ears hearing these stories. So thank you so much, and we'll see you next week. For more information, please visit www.thelifeshiftpodcast.com.